Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
From the hills of Strawberry Canyon, I'm Coin Dang, and this is the Golden Bear Cast. Let's go. Go Bears.
And welcome back to another episode of the California Golden Bear Cast, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. It's just me here. Andy is not here. Of course, I'm Rob. We're just going through some, opponent previews. We're going to try and do this weekly. So the first person we got on, of course, is Nathan from the Reno Slant. Nathan, how are you doing this morning?
I'm well, Rob. I appreciate you having me on this week to talk Cal Nevada. And I guess Andy was scared of me. He thought I must bite or something. It's too bad.
It is kind of set. Andy is currently working. He wanted to be on the pod, but I think that's all a lie. I think
it's the middle of the pandemic. We're all working from home anyway. We're working virtually. What are we talking about?
He's probably on a long lunch break, just thinking about how he doesn't have to ask questions.
That's right.
That's probably where Andy is. But I mean, I guess we can just dive right into it. Cal Nevada. What is your first overall impressions of the Cal team and what you've maybe done some research on leading up to this game on Saturday?
Sure. So a couple things, kind of a peek behind the curtain here. I mean, I've covered Nevada really since 2013. I was originally a sports writer up there. Became a sports editor of a small newspaper on the other side of town. I had a radio show, and then we've been doing the Reno Slant for just going on 3 years now. So I've been covering the team for, hardly 7 or 8 years. I'm originally from Washington, went to school just outside Seattle, so I've been a UW fan my whole life as well. So I have like two different ways of looking at Cal. From the UW perspective, Cal's been a complete pain in our – can we cost this podcast?
Yeah.
Complete pain in the ass over the last couple of years. So I naturally just have a bit of a grievance, annoyance with Cal football because they just play really tough defense. You know, the offense isn't going to light up the scoreboard, but it's probably one of the more frustrating offenses to play because they're just methodical. They'll move the ball up and down the field. They'll play some time possession on you. They'll throw a really good defense out there, and it limits possessions and makes you have to be really, really efficient. And when you look at, you know, Saturday, Nevada wants to play a very different type of game. Nevada wants to get up and down. They want to move the ball. They want to have short possessions. They want to maximize possessions. So you have kind of contrasting styles there. And I put this in the Q&A thing we did that's going to go on the website as well. I don't know if that's a spoiler if I ruin that, but basically, if the game goes, being in Nevada, we talk about sports betting a lot. I think the total's 52.5 here. If the game goes over, I like Nevada's chances. If the game goes under, I like Cal's chances because it speaks to what type of game we're going to see on Saturday. Is it going to be up and down because that plays in Nevada's hands and into Cal's weakness? Or is it a slower game? And if that's the case, then it is to Cal's advantage and Nevada's disadvantage because Nevada's not nearly as good defensively. Not a bad team, but not nearly as good defensively as it is offensively. This is going to be a really fun offense this year.
Well, I mean, let's take a step back and look at the big picture. How has the Nevada fan base and, you know, Nevada fans taken to Norvell and what he's trying to do with that program?
Yeah. some additional context. So this is Jay's fifth year, I believe. And he stepped, when he became the head coach, he was replacing a head coach who was wildly unpopular. Brian Polian, who's now the special teams coordinator at Notre Dame. He just did not connect with the community at all. It's a small community, right? And he just didn't get out there very much. He was always yelling, and it, like any sports coach, it just comes down to, are you winning or are you not? And he, you know, he would go 7-5, he'd go to a bowl game. I mean, that's fine. It's not like Nevada has a very storied history, but, you know, you want to win some bowl games, and 7-5 isn't going to put butts in seats. And so anyone would have been a breath of fresh air after Brian Polian. I mean, the school did like a PR firm or PR run for him his last year, where it's kind of funny where, I mean, he would never come on my radio show. And now he's coming on. He's got Nevada staffers with him. Like, look how he's out in the community and engaging. Now it's like, we all know what's going on right now. So when Jay came in, he's high energy. He plays a fun brand of football. He's authentic, very engaging with the community. And he went 3-9 his first year. And people are like, you know, it's your first year. You're taking over a new program. He has a crazy coaching history in the NFL and the college ranks. And took him, anyone will tell you, way too long to get his first head coaching job. And now he's really maximized that and kind of grabbed that by the horns. And look at what he's got now. And Nevada fans have gotten used to it, just kind of the way it is when you're a program like Nevada is, you start getting success, you start having some fun, and then you start worrying about how long it's going to be until someone takes your head coach. With basketball, it was Eric Musselman, who's now at Arkansas. He flirted with Cal for a little bit, and so that was a relief when he stayed one more year. So there is, I don't want to call it a love affair, that might be a little bit strong, but there is a strong appreciation for Jay, and you're always going to have some in the fan base who are just going to go bonkers for no reason, who are going to be unreasonable. He lost a couple games in a row to UNLV, Nevada's obviously in-state rival. That game gets people obviously fired up, and UNLV is not good at all, has not been, and lost a couple games. It's pretty significant upsets. And so you had those people saying, all right, we need to make a change, which was completely, again, unrealistic, given kind of where Nevada is from how they invest in the program, investment or funding, pretty strapped at a school like Nevada. So Jay's loved in Reno for sure. I don't know, again, love affair might be strong, but people want him to stick around.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the numbers, the S&P Plus numbers for Nevada this year. 74, overall rank is 74, offense 70, defense 83. Is that just about what you kind of expected? Like, is it higher? Is it lower? Like, where do the numbers speak to you?
I'll start on the defensive side of the ball. Defense has been a struggle for Nevada over really the last decade. And before last season, Jay Norvell fired Jeff Castile, pretty recognizable name for those who follow football coaching and familiar with those circles, and replaced him with Brian Ward, who was formerly the defensive coordinator at Syracuse, had a couple of good years there, and then had a really bad year, got fired in the middle of the year. And Nevada had one of its best years statistically in a long, long time last year in terms of points per game average. I can't remember exactly what the number was, but it was, I'm going to say like 25 to 20. I mean, somewhere right around there. And so you just give it the S&P number there in the 80s. I mean, sure. I mean, that sounds fine to me. They didn't force a lot of turnovers last year. They didn't really get after the quarterback. And those are two big things for them this year. They're hoping they can turn the corner. Like every team pretty much in college football, they have basically everyone back. So you're feeling pretty good, but maybe some of those numbers can grow. Offensively, I'm a little surprised to hear it in the 70s, just given what this offense was last year and what they have coming back. I mean, I know we're going to talk about Carson. He's getting a lot of love as a, you know, potential first round draft pick. There's been a couple who've gone so far to project him as number one overall, and make of what you will. You know, mock drafts at this point in the year, you're just trying to get people to click on those things. So you'll put some stuff out there.
Yep.
But you got you definitely have one of the best wide receiver rooms in the country, and that's not hyperbole. You have Romeo Dubs, who went bonkers last year. Him and Carson on the deep ball were ridiculous. They're roommates. They're really good friends. You have Elijah Cooks, who was the team's best offensive player in 2019. He got hurt in the first half of last season, or his first half playing last season, missed the whole year. He's back this year. You have Cole Turner, who also is an NFL prospect at tight end. He's 6'6", 240 pounds. He's a big body. He is just a matchup nightmare. I mean, they'll put him outside and they'll run goal line fades with them. And I joked about this also in my Q&A. I generally hate goal line fades. and Cole single-handedly made me change that opinion, at least for now. We'll wait and see what happens this year if they're as effective with it. But it was like automatic. It was like you just run the goal line fade to Carson. It's going to happen. He had 9 touchdowns last year in 9 games. Then you have a bunch of other guys as well. And you have Torrey Horton, who really emerged last year as a freshman or as a sophomore. Excuse me. You have Jamal Bell, who's really quick, really dangerous in the underneath routes. I think he's going to be a name to watch, along with Melquan Stovall. It's just so many weapons for Carson to throw to. I think Phil Steele has us ranked the number 10 receiving group in the country. And then you throw in the fact that you have a first-round potential quarterback. You have Matt Mummy, who is the son of Hal Mummy, who is the founder of the Air Raid offense, yep, kind of running the whole thing. So it's a lot to be excited about with this Nevada offense, for sure.
I mean, as a Cal fan, right, if we go back, you know, a few years, there's a lot of similarities the last time we played Nevada at home, right? The last time we played Nevada at home in a season opener, the season before, we didn't have any home fans because we were getting our stadium renovated.
Wow.
Last season, we didn't have any fans in the stadium. We have a running back with the last name Tawa. And we have a yep, quarterback who is being touted as a first-round draft pick.
Yep.
It's nightmares. It's nightmares to us. Do you see any similarities between those Kaepernick days, and do you kind of maybe see the game playing out in a little bit of that fashion, where we just don't know who to, from a defensive standpoint for us, it's yeah, how the hell do we guard? Who do we put one-on-one?
Well, I would say right off the bat, one of the bigger differences would be if you look at the quarterback spot. Cap obviously was an unbelievable dual threat quarterback. Carson is not that. One of the questions with him, he has basically a recurring issue with his knee. He gets lesions, and he had to get surgery in high school. He had to miss his whole senior year, and basically has to get work done on it every couple of years because it like builds up, and then you got to get it taken care of. And he had to get it taken care of after his last season. He missed all of spring ball. He missed a fair amount of fall camp. You're not going to see him running all over the place on Saturday. So that would be a big difference. The pictures of that win at Memorial have been just flooding my Twitter timeline leading up to this game. And generally speaking, Nevada fans are coming to this one pretty confident, feeling pretty good about things. I mean, it's a road team versus a Pac-12 school. I mean, I think getting overconfident as a group of 5 schools, maybe a little bit getting ahead of ourselves. And I mean, that was before I started covering the team, but I know my brother, who is one of my co-hosts on the podcast, he went to Nevada. He was at that game. And you ask a lot of Nevada fans, like, what was one of your favorite games? A lot of people go to that game because that was after the renovations. It's a big deal for Cal, and you go on the road and you win a road game versus a Pac-12 or at that point Pac-10 school. Mm-hmm. You can be pretty excited. People also go to the bowl game over Boston College in 2010. That was the year they beat Boise when Boise was number 3 and hoping to go to the BCS title game. So there's, I mean, every fan base is going to have their games, but the win at Cal that year was absolutely one a lot of fans remember of, like, that was an awesome, awesome game. And I think that's part of the reason fans are excited for this one is they're thinking, we did it then, we'll do it again. And it's part of it because it's a really fun, anticipated year.
Oh, I mean, you pretty much nailed it. I think, I mean, if I was a Nevada fan, why wouldn't I be celebrating that win, like, leading up to this game, right? I'd be plastering it all over my wall. And if I knew any Cal fans, like, I would be shoving it in their faces. Just the nightmares I have of, like, that game. I don't think I've ever watched the highlights from that game after I was at that game.
Like, so were you at it? You were at it?
I was at that game. And I don't think I could ever, that image of, yeah, I can't get it out of my head. And so I don't need to relive it by watching the highlights.
I think it was a 31-24 score. I think I mentioned that. And yep, not an unrealistic score for this one. I think Cal's favored by three and a half points.
Yep. Yeah, it's a three point spread. It's gonna be I think it's gonna be a close one. I mean, Vegas nailed the Illinois Nebraska game on the head. It was like the over under was set at 52.5, and I think the score was 52. Like that's
yeah, that's it came incredible. Down to it came down to a missed PAT.
Yeah, exactly.
Nebraska missed a PAT. It was always an 8-point game instead of a 7-point game. Yeah. I got it early, because we do bets of the weekend every week on the podcast, and we have a professional handicapper who comes on as well and give some picks out. So for those of you listening in Berkeley and you want to get involved, head on over. His name's Lee Sterling, founder of Paramount Sports. Really, really fun. But I got it the under at 55, and I was feeling pretty good going into that. I mean, first game of the year, Big Ten, 9 o'clock, two shitty teams. Are you serious? It's going under. And there's a couple crazy plays in there. And then, of course, the line moves and it comes down to college kickers at the end, which was just beautiful.
The beauty of college football. The absolute beauty of college football. All right, let's stick with the offense a little bit. My first question for you is because we stole one of your coaches a couple of years back. We took Angus McClure off of that staff.
Yep.
What was your take on not the move, but how he did as an offensive line coach in, I believe he was there, what, two years?
Two or 3 years. Yeah. Well, it wasn't there super long, but I mean, it's kind of called, it's long when it comes to Division I college coaches. Mm-hmm. The offensive line has a pretty storied tradition, actually, at Nevada. It's called the Union. They take a lot of pride in the offensive line. And candidly, they haven't been very good for a while. It's starting to change a little bit. It was only, I believe, Angus was there when Nevada had, maybe it was the year before he got there. Nevada had, that's on the defense side of the ball, the worst rush defense in the entire country. Obviously, he's offensive line. So the offensive line wasn't great. It was like, him leaving from a scheme perspective wasn't a huge blow. What the blow was that he's so well connected to that community in Northern Nevada, or Northern California, excuse me, and that is a pipeline for Nevada. Carson Strong is a guy from Northern California. So that's an area they recruit hard, and they've been able to kind of pick up the pieces here and continue to recruit well, and they hit the transfer market pretty hard. This offseason brought in some Power 5 guys. So from a scheme perspective, I wouldn't say it was a huge blow, but from a locker room perspective, I know he's a beloved coach and beloved personality. And from a recruiting perspective, that's where that one stung a little bit more.
Mm. Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Well, moving on from that, we talked about the wide receivers. I guess we got to talk about Carson Strong, and then we'll talk about the run game a little bit. So let's talk about the run game, because Carson Strong's the big one we got to talk about. What's your what are your takes on the Nevada run game?
For the run game, so obviously you have not the whole offensive line back. There was, I was left guard, I can't remember. But four of the five starters are back this year. They went from, I believe it was 3.8 yards per carry to 4.3, 4.4 yards per carry last year. So it certainly got better. The key thing to know about the run game at Nevada is they use two running backs. I mean, you really see three. Avery Morrow was pretty impressive as a freshman last year, then had banged up his knee, had surgery as well. So they'll use him sparingly, but it's really a two-headed monster, is a cliche. But you have Toa Taua. You mentioned his brother, who's now the running back coach at Nevada. So there's still two Tauas on the sideline. Toa is, they're listed as or on the two deep as who's the starter, but Toa is the starter. Then Devontae Lee is the backup. And Devontae Lee, if someone wants to just have some fun, type in Devontae Lee high school highlight film. And he played for a small school like Oklahoma, and he's a big dude. He's listed at 5'9", 235. He's a bowling ball. Oof. And he was just running over these kids in Oklahoma. It's pretty funny. So check it out. So Toa is the better ball. He's the better receiving back. He's a little bit quicker. Devontae, not quite as quick, but he's, for as big as he is, you get him running a straight line, he can get moving, and he'll run over some people. Nevada likes to run, or Jay Norvell and Matt Mummy like to run, and it drives me insane. It drives a lot of the fan base insane. They'll run the Wildcat in short yardage with Devontae, and no one can stand it because it's like, I wonder what they're going to do here. Oh, they're going to run off guard. Wow. No way they could scheme for that. And so there was, I forget which game it was last year. They get down to the goal line. It might have been the San Diego State game. They ended up winning that game. First and goal from the one. They won the Wildcat four times, get stuffed four times. And I was like, burn that play forever. And so we've joked in the podcast this week, how many times are they going to run the Wildcat with Devontae Lee? And I'm hoping under 1.5. I'm hoping under 1.5. So the ground game, it's not going to scare anyone. I think they were number 8 in the Mountain West last year in terms of yards per game rushing. Part of that is how well they throw the ball. Mm-hmm. So Nevada's not going to beat any team because they're running the ball this year. The hope is they're just effective enough to try to keep teams honest, to some extent. They're not going to be putting eight in the box, but if you can get, you know, the safety coming down at some point and try to open something up down the field for Romeo or any of the other toys that Carson has to play with, that really is going to be the idea. They run more than you would think. So you got an air raid offense or air raid offensive schemes, but it's not a true air raid offense. They will still run the ball a fair amount. They're not going to throw the ball three times and then hopefully pick up 10 yards. So they'll run more than you think, but it's definitely not the strength of this offense.
Okay. Well, I guess then we have to start talking about the pass game, right? We got to talk about Carson Strong here. Your initial takes on like all the love that he's getting this offseason. Like, I feel like he's one of those names that just kind of popped up like leading the like a month or so, like leading into the season, right? He's not like the Spencer Rattlers or the Sam Howells that everyone's been talking about over the last like 3-4 months.
You know, it's funny you say that. I just had a buddy text me. For those who subscribe to The Athletic just wrote a really cool piece on Carson. So for those who want to go check it out. And I said exactly, it's crazy how much his name has blown up over the course of the last, you know, 6 to 8, 10 months here. I remember when he committed to Nevada, and I remember sometimes you go to their Twitter account, like, hey, see what's going on here? Are they that type of recruit? Is someone really under the radar? And it's weird how the brain works. You're like, oh, they only have 300 followers. They must suck. But like, this is, these guys are just marketers now, basically, these recruits for trying to get noticed. So it doesn't really carry that much water. But he was at that time, I still don't think he's, I know he's not very active on social media now, but I remember seeing the name, like Carson Strong. That's a cool name, like a cool quarterback name. And from Vacaville, strong pipeline there. Our kicker, Brandon Talton, also from Vacaville. And didn't make a ton of it, but you look at his frame. He was 6'4 in high school. He was 6'4. He missed his senior year. You didn't really know what to expect. He redshirted his first year in 2018. And then in 2019, for those who watched Last Chance U, remember the name Malik Henry. Malik Henry was at Nevada at that point. And it was a three-way competition for the job at that point. And the general consensus was it was going to be Malik or it was going to be Carson. I'm trying to remember who the third one. I can't remember at this point, so my apologies. But Carson ends up winning the job. There was the Purdue game. Some people may remember that game. Nevada won at Mackey. Brandon Talton, at that point, a freshman walk-on kicker who no one had ever heard of, hits a 56-yarder at the gun to win that one 34-31. He gets a scholarship that night, and it really was kind of a fairy tale kind of story. And here's me talking about kickers when you're asking me about Carson. So it's been a fun progression to watch Carson come along. Got banged up his first year. Last year, he explodes onto the scene, and I think it just makes sense that he's starting to get some of the attention. 6'4", he's very cerebral. He's got a hand cannon. Granted, this scheme does accentuate his talents. But, I mean, given how important that position is, I mean, we'll see what happens, because now with the way NFL is going now, how important it is to be mobile, and you're seeing some of the guys who really succeed are guys who can move the pocket, who can be a threat with their legs, and Carson's just not that. So he has to be even more cerebral and even more accurate and have an even stronger arm. So you don't see it a lot at Nevada, where you have, especially at a quarterback, someone jump up to the first round. That is the position that tends to happen. But, I mean, Nevada hasn't had, I think it's one, has had one player drafted in the last handful of years. It's been a while since they've had someone drafted. And now they're in a position where they're going to have potentially three, maybe four guys drafted next year.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at, you know, Carson's stats from 2019, and I mean, three touchdowns in that first game against Purdue, another two against New Mexico, three against Fresno State, one against UNLV, and then I believe it's a bowl game against Ohio. He threw a touchdown. Like his, in terms of his progression, like I mean, that Purdue game, he just just announced himself to the world a little bit.
Yes.
And then comes back down to earth a little bit against Oregon. 89 passing yards, 52% completion rate, and two interceptions. Yep. Not the best of performances. But do you think that, like, that he had, I think, a four-game stretch there where he didn't throw a single touchdown pass, and then all of a sudden he starts to build up his touchdown passes again?
Yep.
Was that kind of like the inflection point of his, like, his college career, like where he maybe started to understand a little bit better?
I mean, I don't. You could probably look, statistically, you look back and you could certainly make that argument. You know, when the season ended, we were all in the way that Carson finished the year.
Yeah,
there was definitely a feeling of, okay, next year might be fun. Like, he really things something's really started to click for him. He did. I mean, at that athletic piece, for anyone who wants to check it out, he did break his collarbone in that Purdue game that went undiagnosed for a few weeks. And so he was banged up at Oregon, came off the field at Oregon. He was fighting injuries, wasn't playing well. Then they sat him for a few weeks, and then he came back, and then you see the numbers really start to go. I think he had 8 touchdowns and a pick over the final 5 games, something like that.
Yep.
And that had you feeling really good going into last year. And then you see what happened last year. I mean, I think it was 27 touchdowns to 4 picks. He completed, I think, 72% of his passes, and he's eyeing 80% this year is a goal he has for himself, which is kind of crazy given that he throws the ball deep a lot. That was also a huge progression in his game. His first year had guys open, was just overthrowing guys. Just overthrowing. It wasn't underthrowing, but overthrowing guys, something he worked on a lot. And the stat I plucked, because I knew it may come up. He completed 9 passes last year of 40 or more yards. That was tied for 3rd nationally. So he's certainly improved his touch on the deep ball, and a reason that he's getting as much love as he is at the next level.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely slightly afraid. I can't. I have to be a little bit optimistic. We haven't even played our first game of the season, but I'm still slightly afraid. Like, I'm looking at his stats from last season, because So here's the thing for me, right? Last season, we only played 4 games.
Yep.
And I've seen some Nevada sites being like, ha, they suck. They lost 3 games and only won 1 out of their 4 games they played.
Last year for the Pac-12 was a complete wash.
Yeah. I don't know how you can judge off of 4 games, especially the one of the losses being a game that was rescheduled within 48 hours. So, but I mean, you guys, Nevada actually played an actually full 9-game season, or decently full 9-game season. Yeah. And this guy throws 4 touchdowns, then 2, then 3, then 3, then 2, then 2, and then 5 against Fresno State, and then 5 against Tulane to end the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's definitely throwing the ball around a lot. And so let's flip it to the other side. We talked about Carson Strong.
Mm-hmm.
From what you've seen, how does that scheme match up against Cal's defense? And what you know of Cal's defense.
In terms of, like, what Nevada's offense is going to do against Cal's defense?
Yeah, like, let me pose the question better. Where is Cal's defense going to falter the most against this Nevada team? Or where is Nevada's offense, you think, going to be the most successful against this Cal defense?
Yeah. I think that's what's going to decide this game. That's the matchup, is this passing attack versus Cal's secondary. I mean, that's strength on strength. I mean, because, again, if Nevada is able to pick up some chunk plays, get up and down the field, put some points up on the board, especially early, and then force Chase Garbers to kind of maybe try to start forcing the ball down the field, I mean, that plays into Nevada's hands. That's what Nevada wants to do. So that's the matchup I'm watching in this game, is obviously the Cal secondary versus Nevada's receivers in this passing game. You mentioned a lot of Carson's stats last year. College quarterback, it's football. I mean, not like he's bulletproof. I mean, there were certainly some games last year. The Hawaii game last year, it was a perfect storm. Nevada was undefeated. Going to Hawaii is always a pain. The game's going to start at 8:00 our time here on the West Coast. You never know about the officiating. And Hawaii just is such a better team at home than on the road. And Hawaii's out of nowhere grew a defense last year, and they have a really good secondary, and Nevada put up 21 points, and they lost that game 24-21. And if I'm any team playing Nevada the rest of the way last year or this year, I'm pulling up that game film and just being like, what do we do? What did Hawaii do? And what Hawaii did was they were willing to let Nevada run the ball. I think Nevada averaged like 6 yards a carry in that game. And Cal's front, at least the defensive line, is supposed to be a little better this year, but they're going to give up some yards on the ground. And if I'm Cal, that's what I'm going to do. All right, we'll let you run. We'll let you run some clock. We're going to let you have to really work and earn these possessions. We're not going to give up chunk plays. And we're going to make you earn it. And I think that's what Cal, I would guess, what they're going to try to do here. Obviously, you're not going to want to give up 40-yard bombs to Romeo Dubs every other play. So in terms of where I see one succeeding or one faltering, I mean, that's why the spread is 3 points. Mm-hmm. I'm not anticipating going and leaving the game Saturday and being like, wow, Cal's secondary totally dominated Nevada. Nevada's going to get its plays. But I'm not expecting Nevada to come out and completely dominate Cal's secondary and Carson to throw for 350 yards and 5 touchdowns. That's not going to happen.
Okay. Let's talk about the other side of the ball for a little bit. Let's talk about Nevada's defense. Who are some guys on this defense? I mean, of course, we talked about Carson Strong so much and Taua and on Dobbs on the offense. Who are some guys on the defense that Cal fans that are watching should be keeping an eye on? And, you know, if you're the Cal offensive coordinator, like, this is who you want to avoid. This is where we're moving our offense away from.
Yeah. The real kind of bugaboo, if you will, for Nevada secondary has been certainly through the air over the last few years, and now they have everyone back. Bentley Sanders transferred in from USF. He's projected to start at nickel. They're hoping he can make a splash, get a couple. Their best corner is Burdale Robbins. He's a fifth-year senior. They got a safety in Tyson Williams, who will get beat through the air. He's a really good run blocker, though. He's a big hitter. And being, you know, a Seattle sports fan, I'm always going to appreciate a hard-hitting safety on my cancer jersey in the closet. So that's where this team has been more vulnerable in the past. They've gotten much better against the run over the last few years. I mean, a name to certainly keep an eye on is Dom Peterson. He's been there a few years now. He's a senior. If he was just a couple inches taller, he'd be a legit NFL prospect as well. He may still get, he'll get some looks for sure, and if all goes well for him, you know, maybe he hears his name called on the third day. But he's probably someone who's for sure going to be a fringe undrafted free agent signing at 6 feet. He was a defensive end. They moved him inside to defensive tackle, and he can be a game wrecker. I mean, there's some games where he just takes over. He's that talented. Sam Hammond is a local kid, big kid, 6'5", 265, defensive end. Went to a really small high school in Northern Nevada, Yerington. And was a walk-on and then just put a ton of weight on and has become one of the impact guys on this defense. The defensive line is probably the strength of this defense. And at the second level, Lawson Hall, who is a fan favorite. He was someone who also came into the program very unheralded, worked his way up, and is now probably one of the vocal leaders of this group. He's been on the podcast before, and you know what it's like interviewing some athletes, I'm mm-hmm. sure. You typically don't get a lot out of them, but just really down to earth, easy to root for, and wears really cool stirrup socks. That'll be hopefully I'll get a tweet out a few different times. This is a Lawson Hall sock appreciation tweet. So I kind of went through all three levels. So secondary has been vulnerable in the past, defensive line getting a lot better, and certainly some names who have been there for a while at the second level.
I mean, those are a lot of names to go through. But I think I have a better gauge of how I need to watch Nevada come Saturday night.
Perfect.
Couple last remaining questions for you. We talked a lot about the players. Who do you think is the one guy, or, you know, you pick one offensive guy, one defensive guy, that's going to be mm-hmm. the game breaker for this game?
I'm not going to go to offense or defense.
Ooh.
I'm going to go special teams here.
Ooh.
I did this in the Q&A thing as well. If this game goes the way that I think it's going to go, I don't think it's going to get into the 30s. I think this game's going to end up in the 20s. Mm-hmm. That would suggest a slower game. It would suggest field position. And Nevada has a really good punter. Julian Diaz, I mean, back to my sports writing days, I used to make a lot of jokes, get all worked up about like the all-league, all-conference teams, just how political it is and how stupid it can be at times. Julian Diaz led the Mountain West last year in yards per punt, in net. I think he was right up there with hang time as well, and for, somehow he ends up on the third team. Like, you look at all the metrics, I don't understand how that happens. He had one touchback last year, one, in nine games. He's a really good punter, and usually you go into a really important game like this, and you're not looking to the punter, but he is a weapon that people may forget about, and if you're in a low-scoring game, field position will matter. It is going to make a difference if you can pin some at the 5 versus set him up at the 20 because you're hoping to get 3 and out and then get the ball back at midfield. Now you'll need a couple first downs and you're kicking a Brandon Salton field goal. So for I'm going to go to Julian Diaz. One, just be contrarian and be a little bit different. But two, he is a legit weapon for this team, especially in a game that might have a slower game flow.
I swear I did not plan this. Like we put out our prediction pod yesterday, and in the prediction pod, if you haven't listened to it, if you're listening to this, go listen to it. Andy, one of Andy's predictions is that our punter is going to win us a game this season. And in back-to-back episodes, we're talking about punters being the game breakers to a college football game. Man,
so, somewhere, Pat McAfee smiles for the brand.
He does. Maybe we'll have to send this to Pat McAfee. Look, back-to-back episodes, we talked about punters.
Punters are people, too. I played baseball in college, and I was a pitcher, and we had to say it all the time. Not pitchers are people, pitchers are athletes. And I know that special teams guys do the same thing. Special teams guys tend to be a little bit weird, and pitchers are the same way. So I think I always will have a bit of affinity for special teams guys. Maybe that's what's going on.
Oh, shoot. Well, I guess I'm going to watch for the punter now. I'm going to watch. Yep. I'm going to watch for it's the battle between Jameson Sheehan and Julian Diaz. That's the real matchup that everyone's here to watch.
I'll get the game some eyeballs. Yeah.
Well, that's all the questions I have for you, Nathan. The one to end on, your score prediction for the game.
Happy to give it. So again, some quick context here. On the podcast, I typically take more of a cerebral, analytical look at games. And my brother is just the unapologetic homer. And so he will always pick Nevada to win every game. And I always give him shit for it because I'm like, you think people really want to come on and just hear you wave the Nevada flag the whole time? Or do you think they actually want you to share what you actually think? Because not every fan thinks Nevada honestly is going to win every single game. And that's kind of the fun back and forth we have.
Right.
I picked in this game, I picked a 27-23 final, and I picked Cal to win. And I will say that I picked Nevada to finish the year 10-2. 7-1 in Mountain West play. I had this being one of the losses. I think the fact that Carson missed a lot of fall camp is a factor. Yes, he's a veteran. Yes, he knows the offense. Yes, he has rapport and chemistry with the guys he's throwing to. And I forgot to mention Cole Turner. Tight end is also one of his roommates. So that house, it's Carson Strong, Cole Turner, and Romeo Dubs. I mean, the chance they all three get drafted, kind of wild. So that is a factor. But offenses typically aren't always going to hit on all cylinders right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the fact they're going on the road, especially the fact they're playing a Pac-12 team that has a pretty good defense, that gives me some pause heading into this one. If Nevada wins, I'm not going to be completely shocked. Oh, my God, I can't believe they won that game. I just think this leans a little bit more towards Cal. I also, our listeners will say I'm more skeptical most of the time. So we'll see. I'm very confident it's going to be a fun game. And regardless, I'm excited we got football going on. Last year was a disaster. I'm talking with you. We're previewing a game. It just feels right. I'm glad to have football season back.
It is. Finally, some sense of normalcy with football actually coming back.
Yep.
Well, Nathan, I appreciate the time. That's, of course, Nathan from the Reno Slant. Where can the fine Cal fans find you on the Twitterverses or elsewhere?
Yeah, exactly. One thing I know about Cal fans is they really care about what's going on up in Reno following Nevada Wolfpack, but I'm happy to provide some details here. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'll obviously be live tweeting the game on Saturday, so if you want to see kind of a Nevada perspective or a Nevada hater perspective from some of our listeners, you can check that out. It's Shoup Nathan, so S-H-O-U-P. Shout with the P. Nathan, if you want to check out the podcast, I mean, you can find us everywhere you listen to this podcast. Just type in the Reno Slant. It'll pop up. If you want to check out our website, we have a lot of preview stuff for this game leading up to Saturday. Just go to therenoslant.com. You'll see Nevada Cal preview. You'll see game-by-game predictions. You can listen to our preview of this game. And that was all this week. That pod dropped last night, Wednesday night.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Nathan, for joining us on the pod for this preview episode.
And for the rest of the Cal fans everywhere, as always, go Bears.